This is the one with space archaeologists.
A cryogenic honeycomb.
Abundant Cybermen stencils.
And a band of sneaky foreigners.
It's called Tomb of the Cybermen.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space. Counting Daleks, Dalek Boot, and the Cybertronic race. Some Taurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Back when. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode
C037.
What? Of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or Doc Past.
Damn right. I am Ponkin, and sitting next to me is the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, Nick O'Leary.
How you doing, podcast land?
Hello, Nick.
Hi.
Today we are taking a look at Tomb of the Cybermen, which is, in many ways, I feel, a legendary episode of, or serial of Classic Who. It is, by far, the most popular Troughton serial, I think is fair to say.
Is it the most complete?
No, there are other complete, as in fully intact episodes or serials that I think may even have more episodes. Like, this is a four-episode arc, so it's a relatively short serial. But yes, you're right. It is completely intact and it's in, like, exquisite condition.
Yeah, absolutely. Apart from some of the zooms.
But also, the reason I say it's, like, probably the most popular one is it was used as the representative of the Troughton era at the 40th anniversary and the 50th anniversary. And that was like fans going, this is that seminal Troughton serial.
Right on.
Pretty rad, right?
Cool.
Yeah. We're on Telos, second home and final resting place of the Cybermen, where a group of Caucasian archaeologists and their shady foreign financiers have just uncovered the capsule hotel slash titular tomb of the Cybermen.
Doc, Jamie, and newcomer Victoria obviously join the expedition, and together they explore and subsequently awaken a horde of sleepy Cybermen. Hilarity ensues.
You are welcome. Oh, bees go over. I've got a little bit of trivia about this one.
Oh, start us off.
Before we kick off, if you're interested, check this out. This is a conglomerate of trivia ripped from the pages of IMDb and TARDIS Wikia. Starting off with, this one had two working titles. It was first known as, or going to be known as, the Ice Tombs of Telos.
Right.
What do we think of that?
Much better.
Yeah, there you go. And the Cybermen planet. Not the Cyberman planet, the Cybermen planet. Which to me sounds
worse.
Really weird.
Much worse.
Thank God they didn't go with that.
The first one was badass, though. What the hell? The Ice Tombs.
The Ice Tombs of Telos. Which is so cool.
That's cool.
And also, isn't this... Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is like... This was probably released as Tomb of the Cybermen, episode 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah.
Like, people already knew from the get-go that it was a Cyberman thing.
Yeah, the
Ice Tombs of Telos.
Having said that, the giant stencils...
I know, that's in my mouth as well.
Yeah, I would have called it the womb of the Cybermen. With some of the
hot.
Some of the imagery that comes out of the But anyway, moving on.
Very sexual.
Wombs aren't particularly sexual.
The womb of the Cybermen.
Anyway, yeah. Moving on.
You started this. Anyway, we have three more Cybermen stories in Troughton.
Ooh.
The Wheel in Space, The Invasion, and The War Games.
All sound awesome, just by title alone.
Super cool, right? Yeah. The Wheel in Space is a title that I know as a legendary serial, but I have no idea what it's about. Probably bunch of cybers.
And a wheel.
Yeah. Check this out. Matt Smith watched this serial to prepare himself for Doctor Who, and this is what inspired him to don a bow tie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I draw very little parallels between his the way he chose to be Doctor and this episode.
Really weird. It also makes me think that he didn't know anything about Doctor Who before he became the Doctor himself. It's like, I'm just going to watch something. I'll watch that Tomb of the Cybermen serial.
I'm going to watch this and do everything the opposite, apart from that bow tie.
Okay. You know Professor Parry?
Yes.
Desmond Llewellyn of Q fame, Q of James Bond fame, auditioned for it but didn't get it.
Shit.
Oh, there
are... I'm not sure I could see Desmond Llewellyn saying... "This is my expedition," 47 times, as well as that guy did.
Oh, didn't he, like, famously only do one take for each James Bond film? Like, for every little bit that he did?
Badass.
And did you know that he was paid by the day, as opposed to in royalties or, like, a big fat check on James Bond? This is, like, one of the... Sorry, the James Bond
tangent. Next week on Bond Back When.
Okay, so one last piece of trivia, because actually this list is way too long, but I've got one last bit. There's a woman in this expedition called Kaftan.
Yes, great name, by the way.
Super good name. I wonder if she's... Yeah, okay, whatever. So...
Naked peddler.
That role was specifically written for the actress Shirley Cooklin. Shirley Cooklin was at the time married to the producer Peter Bryant. But Fraser Hines, who plays Jamie, did not know that, and thus made a complete tit of himself by flirting the shit out of her? With her. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
On day one of production.
Jamie is a lad.
Yeah.
Huge lad.
What a dude.
Maybe he just knew, just didn't give a fuck, he's balling.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the introductory trivia I've got for this one.
That's cool. She blew your load.
Someone hand me a towel. Shall we jump into episode one?
Let's. So we start here with Victoria being shown the inside of the TARDIS, and what doesn't she say?
Let's have a soundbite of that.
What do you think?
I don't know. Can't believe it. So big.
Thanks, Victoria. Don't worry about 50 years worth of legacy, you prick.
Oh, is that what I was thinking? I was thinking of...
What are all these knobs?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. No, I was thinking she doesn't say it's bigger on the inside, whatever.
No, that's a really good point. That's like the 1967 equivalent of it's bigger on the inside. Yeah,
it's big, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks, Victoria.
Well, not very impressed,
really
are
glad
you?
You're here. And she's wearing a relatively ornate dress.
Yes, which I didn't really make a note of it, but I assume it's the same dress she wore in Evil of the Daleks.
Presume.
Her Victorian garb. My first note here, or my first observation here, was that Jamie is all of a sudden, like, the biggest expert on time travel. He's like, yeah, those are the knobs that we use to travel through space, and those are the ones that we twiddle every now and then when we've got to go through time. This is a TARDIS, mind you.
He's been around now, hasn't he?
I suppose,
I feel like what he said wasn't out of the realms of someone that has stood near someone for a time. So he's like, yeah, he twiddles those ones and we go backwards. Twiddles those ones, we go forwards.
I suppose.
You know? He didn't say anything crazy.
Yeah, no, okay. Actually, you are completely right. Yeah. I take back any kind of antagonism there. And we also get, like, before we go to said arid landscape, we get a mention of the Doctor's age, which is, I think, pretty sure, the first time that they mentioned the Doctor's age on Doctor Who at all.
And he was 400 and something.
450 years.
Yes.
In Earth time.
In Earth years, yes.
Yeah, well, Earth years, you're right.
And Victoria is very concerned for the old man.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? In this opening scene, I like Victoria.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, she is worse, but then I think that's Kit Pedler more than it is the actress and all.
Yeah, she's very much... She is really just a damsel in distress in most of this.
They all are, aren't they?
But she's also... She's a crack shot. I mean...
Oh, yes. That was badass. We'll get to
it. Oh, yeah, we'll get to it. Like, out of nowhere, she turns into fucking Sly Stallone.
Known for his shooting ability.
Yeah, because he shoots shit. Like, that's my go-to dude who shoots stuff.
Sly Stallone, the man. Not a character that he once played.
Fine, okay.
Sly Stallone is really good at shooting things.
Fine. Victoria, like, goes from zero to Cobra Cabretti.
Just like Patrick Swayze is the greatest actor of our time.
Remember that.
From Ponkin and Friends, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, so we've done the whole TARDIS, shown you around the TARDIS, put on some new clothes because it's ain't Victorian times. Lady.
Exactly. And now we're going off somewhere.
Yes. And now is the arid landscape that I alluded to earlier. There's the expedition. Oh, we get a shot of, what's his name?
Toberman.
Which is only one letter different from Doberman.
I didn't think about that.
Super racist, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
We don't know this yet. Actually, when we cold open, I think I wrote a note and it was like, oh, there's going to be some black characters.
Yeah.
And that's cool and progressive. Nope.
Not at all. That was
opposite.
In this one, we have a very, very large, like huge, giant hulk of a man, right, with enormous biceps, who is a foreigner, who isn't the most verbal, shall we say, and is basically just the muscle of the show. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And in the last one, we had Kemmel, who I can't remember where he was from. I can't remember. But he was the Dave Bautista of his time. He was just like this massive hulk of a man who, in fact, also was mute. So he didn't say a word.
The more easy recent cinema parallel that I want to make here is in Django Unchained.
Oh, yeah. It's,
he's a Mandingo, isn't he?
Yes.
That's exactly That's exactly what Kip Pedler had written.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
Anyway, so that's not the point.
And he's the servant. He is the servant. Yeah.
They stop short of saying a slave.
Yeah.
But then funnily, that gets parroted back, and I'll get to that.
Yeah.
But anyway, we open on this expedition, crawling across the surface of this arid landscape, and they're all very worried and anxious. You can't be out in the open. That's the they have to keep moving. That's one of the things. Toberman's up top of the landscape.
Yeah, gorgeous dolly shot there, by the way.
Yeah, and it's like, get down, doesn't he know how dangerous this is? says the leader. And then some other of the group turn up and say,
sorry, we had to make it a pretty big one.
Which...
Yeah.
what the hell is that?
So we had a minor interlocution about this line before pressing record.
If you have a better idea than what these kids were up to whilst they were gone, but it sounds like they were clearly dropping a deuce.
Yeah, they clearly went around the corner, like around the nearest hill, and just dropped trout. That's exactly what they did.
Okay, so then they dynamite something, right, yeah. Essentially, which we realise is an entrance to something.
Yeah, which looks exactly like, I mean, in no way did they copy this in advance, but it looks exactly like the Federation hideout in Star Trek Insurrection.
I'm thinking more, it looks more like the, what's the damn place in Egypt with the warfare?
Yes.
That's what that's supposed to be, I assume.
Like it's built into the the mountain.
What's it called? Alnasser? I don't know, something.
Future Bonk.
Yeah, please.
Bing bong, Future Punk in here with, a completely non-Whovian tangent. I looked this up, and the place that I was thinking of is called Abu Simbel in Egypt. But actually, thinking about it, and thank you Google Images for this, by the way, the city of Petra in Jordan might be a better comparison. Anyway, non-Whovian tangent over. Back to the show.
Thanks for my ignorance. But yes, that's what I think they were supposed to try to replicate.
Okay. At which point, Doc, Vicky, and Jamie show up.
Yep.
Like... basically out of nowhere as far as this expedition's concerned.
What is weird about this is that they notice and they say, something's landed over that hill.
Where they hear the noise of the TARDIS, right?
Where they hear the noise, but they say, something's landed, I think.
Okay.
Future one coming up. But, how would they fucking... it materialises. It doesn't land.
But they don't see it. So they just hear the noise, so they probably assume that it's a rocket ship or something.
Okay.
Right. At the very least, they assume that it's mechanical.
Okay.
Right? I'm guessing.
Okay, so the Doc, Vicky, and Jamie...
Yeah.
The little Jamie show up, and what happens? Like every other episode,
instantly are recruited.
Well, not quite instantly. Actually, there was more back and forth in this one than there was in any of the other side.
Okay, yes,
ones,
fine, but there's like you can split the expedition into two parties. There's like the sinister shitbags, and then there are the people who are like open-minded and there in the name of science. And the latter
group, white people.
Yes, exactly. Sorry, I retract my former statement. You can split them up into the foreigners and the white people. And the white people like immediately go, hey, you're a fellow scientist, let's do this. Yeah? And the foreigners, because we really need to address this.
Yeah.
They all go, no, this is our expedition.
Essentially, where it's pitched at this point as a commercial thing.
Yeah.
They've invested money into the expedition.
Yeah.
And it's very clear, like, I don't understand this. What is this about a trope of expeditions? Does someone need to clue me in? Why would you bring
the finance
guys along?
Exactly. You don't bring your fucking accountant. Oh, you know what? It's the Jurassic Park syndrome. There's the goddamn accountant is there in the van.
I mean, and this happens on various other things, like, oh, we're in space, but this guy's paying for it. Why is he here? Why is he not at home, wherever he made the money
from? What's his face in Congo? Oh, fuck. Jurassic Park and this is the Michael Crichton.
Michael Crichton.
Yeah, it's the Michael Crichton trope.
Yeah. But I don't know, it's bizarre to me. It's like, why have you brought them? They're not scientists. They're not archaeologists.
They know nothing. Like, I get why they brought Toberman, because he is huge. I mean, the guy is like 6 foot tall, super muscular. They got to pick up big rocks or open heavy doors. Yeah, he actually proves himself quite capable of that. But, oh, no, whatever.
Anyway.
Kaftan is bullshit.
The worst.
And the other
most
one, Klieg.
Racist name.
Klieg.
Eric Klieg. Klieg.
Eric Klieg, Kaftan, and Toberman, they are the foreigners. The good guys, aka the white guys, they are led by Professor Parry, who isn't played by Q, and also feature a bunch of Americans who are like the astronauts, basically. They're like the pilots.
Yeah.
Right?
So no, soldiers. No. They're the soldiers. They're the muscle.
Oh, they are the... You're right. They are the muscle. Yeah. And Toberman is just like this manservant of Kaftan. Yeah. Whatever. The Americans, you must have thought of... Is it the 10th Planet? The best fake American accents ever.
These are way worse than that. They were shocking.
I really want to soundbite Captain Hobb as the leader, I think. I want to soundbite him saying the most American thing Kid Peddler could think of.
A big deal.
Big deal.
Big deal.
Man, you just blew yourself a pair of doors.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they've like, that doesn't make
sense. Clearly sexual
sense.
Component
not,
of that, though.
It's not a phrase.
That's no,
not
it's a position phrase. Is what it is. Okay, whatever. Let's speed ahead to the doors. Doc and Cole then are part of the expedition. They're at the doors. There are massive F-off stencils of Cybermen on the walls.
Yeah. And the doctor says, oh, Cybermen, you must be looking for Cybermen or some shit, right?
Wait, I don't think so.
No,
I think...
No, they do. They do, because I was looking for that. I was like, is anyone going to address these stencils?
Oh, really?
And, well, the doc says, Jamie and Victoria, I think Victoria's scared and wants to leave or whatever, and said, no, we can't now because Cybermen.
Yeah, but I think the doctor, like, he reacts to someone saying, this is the tomb of the Cybermen. He goes,
yeah.
The Cybermen?
It's oh,
like,
yeah,
you're
maybe,
standing
maybe,
next
maybe.
To a massive fucking drawing of a Cyberman.
Maybe he was playing dumb.
And you're on Telos.
Maybe he was playing dumb because he wanted to know whether these people knew, whether they knew where they were.
Possibly.
He does that later.
Yeah, you are right about that.
So, anyway, this is my big first massive plot hole.
Okay.
Huge.
All right.
So, the Doctor, they're at the Tomb of Cybermen.
Yep.
He knows that in there, super dangerous,
yep.
crazy dangerous.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
People. These people want to get in and cause havoc. He quite rightly doesn't want them to get in and to mess up.
And they on their own fail to get in.
Let's just stop there.
Exactly.
It's secure.
End of serial.
Whatever security was in place.
Clearly working.
It's fine. We're good. Why did you take that extra step?
Why did you let them in?
Why?
I know exactly. Yeah.
The one kid died because he got offered the great sum of £50.
£50 because the deflation of the British pound
in
the year, whatever. Unless this is like Telos pounds.
This is, that was an advert for the living wage people.
Yeah.
Anyway. yeah, so that kid gets electrocuted for the sake of £50 and then the American goes, well, he won't be collecting no £50 off you.
Yeah.
And then subsequently... Doctor goes, all right, I'll get us all in.
Yeah, I'll sort this out.
Why?
Why? Makes absolutely no sense. In this tiny little act, he condemns most of them to death.
Yes.
He is responsible for so many deaths.
And actually puts us all in danger.
Yeah, all of mankind. In fact, most of the universe. Oh, whatever. Quick note, the gadget that he uses, I'm not sure, but I think the gadget that he uses to sort of deactivate the electrocution element of the door is the same gadget that he nicked when he was on the moon base.
Mm.
Do you remember he like grabbed something and he just pocketed it? I think that's the same one. I don't know.
Mm. Anyway, so he can't get the doors open. Wee little Jamie tries with all his might. and then Toberman
shows up, basically does the job for him.
Yeah.
We go into a control room first.
Yeah.
There are like tons and tons of controls everywhere. And
yeah,
not just that.
Things.
The place has been cyber-branded to hell.
Yes.
Like...
Yeah, the brand alignment is on point. Whoever the marketing team for the Cybermen are, they are real good.
They put a stencil on every available
that
surface.
Is a good brand
chairs,
management.
Chairs, tables, gadgets,
they got a Twitter
doors.
Feed, the whole lot. It's a thing. It's a four-point marketing strategy. Yeah.
And there's a whole set of, like, all these levers.
Yeah.
Okay, so in this room, there are two doors, both locked. Clearly doors, and a hatch, also locked, and a bunch of levers. Again, this is the next step in the, Doctor, you can back off now. You have to pull the levers in a certain way, like it's
so
basically
actually,
a quiz, it's like
a
little
a
conundrum.
Thing. I think, and I don't know, not a mathematician, not a scientist.
Go
right?
for it.
But the amount of mathematical language in this serial
yeah.
is off the
off the charts. Like, and actually, all pretty accurate from what I can gather, yeah. Or at least actual mathematical terms, Fourier analysis.
Yeah, possibly in, like, in an incorrect fictional context.
I have no idea, but actually, it's... I mean, I think this might have been, again, Kit Pedler's scientist side coming out.
Yeah.
And him, like, this is super plausible.
I 100% agree with you. In fact, I've made a note of a soundbite, the doc providing some techno babble about binary series. Hmm? It's a little bit later on in the show, but fuck it, let's just pop it in here, shall we?
If you take any progressive series, it can be converted into binary notation. If you take the sum of the integrants and express the result as a power series... then the indices show the basic binary blocks. Only I wouldn't do it if I were you.
I mean, yeah, from the little I know about mathematical language, that was all real things, they said,
yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that was cool. I mean, that's the best thing about it. That's the sort of light and dark with Ian Kip Hitler. Even though he can't really do characters and, you know, humanity very well, he's actually very good at the science.
Yeah.
The science.
He really tries to ham-fist that everywhere.
Yeah.
And in a way, like, from a just... if you had to rate it, like... rate the story element and rate the just the sci-fi factor of this episode. It's sci-fi beyond belief.
The sci-fi factor is great, because the great thing about Kit Pedler and Jerry
something.
Someone.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kit, is that, that he does go through the scientific method by all of his things.
Yeah.
The thing from War Machines to now.
Yeah. Remember we were talking about the testing of the weaponry in War Machines here. You're totally right. You've got the weapons testing in one of the rooms here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they go through that bit where the doctor gives them a certain amount of the problem, but the guy needs to follow it some more. And they go through, you know...
yeah, iterative development.
Yeah, absolutely. And that shit doesn't happen in sort of what you might call New Who. They're just like, I'm a genius, I figured it out. Don't worry about how.
Yeah. 100% agree with you. Okay, so they pull some levers. Actually, the doctor pulls levers. He opens these doors for no reason whatsoever. The humans haven't even noticed that there are doors in there. He's like, there are fucking two doors here, man.
The guy was so stumped. I mean, this is in the forward thing that we just soundbited. So stumped at how to work, make this stuff work.
Yeah. What? There is no way in hell that these human scientists would ever make it this far, let alone into the tomb. Regardless, Doc pulls some levers, the doors open, and we go, like, let's split up. Let's meet back here in 10 minutes. And they send, like, the most random combination of characters into these rooms. You've got Vicky, Kaftan, and one, not the professor, but, like, the other scientist.
Oh, yeah, that dude.
Other, like, good guy scientist.
Another baldy dude, but...
yeah. Send them into one room, and Jamie and some random honcho into the other one. And we've got, like, these awesome challenges in there. It's like Fort Boyard. It's like, one room has the weird hypnosis wall.
I'm going to call it, just for our European list. Well, for our
non-European
list. Yeah, non-European. Yeah. Crystal Maze, that might be a good one.
Oh, well done. Yeah, okay, so, fine. Jamie and Honcho, whatever his name is, they go into this weird room with more levers, a wall that hypnotizes them.
I know. See, that's a hilarious little bit there. We kind of want to rush past that.
Okay, sorry.
Like, pull in levers. Look at the far wall. You mean most of the room. How have you seen everything apart from most of the room?
You're
and
right.
That happens in Moonbase, where they're where there's a giant patio window of that guy with a condom on his head fucking stuff up with a graviton.
Yeah.
But no one notices. Most of the room.
Also, in that same scene, there's a Cybermat. We now get the introduction of the Cybermats, and Jamie just picks it up willy-nilly. It's like, there's this pretty creepy-looking robot insect.
Now, so that little robot mouse thing is different in scale and detail to the eventual Cybermat.
We've had... I had to look this up. There have been several iterations of the Cybermats, and it seems as though in the 80s there was a Cybermat that was, like, the size of a... like a large dog.
I mean in this serial. The Cybermats end up in the, like, third or fourth episode.
Yeah, you're right. This one's, like, tiny.
Yeah,
and the other one's, like, massive.
Yeah,
they're, like, from Slither.
Yeah. Whereas they're more like, the ones that subsequently, like, in the 80s, 90s, 80s now sort of thing. Anyway, so you've got this thing. It's, like, it's a fossil. It's a little caterpillar. It's something like that, right?
It's very clearly a robot thingy.
Has eyes.
Has really creepy, like, biological-looking eyes. As opposed to metal ones, right? Yeah.
Well, actually, that was one of the best things about this serial, is that they actually got more down to the whole bio end, like all the symbolism, the bio end of the mechanics of the Cybermen, like the what we'll get to in the honeycomb and stuff, and these little Cybermats, and you know, then that element.
There's more of sort of a realistic scientific background or foundation to the Cyberman culture than we've seen so far in classic, anyway. Yeah, is this closer to New Who Cybermen in a way?
Yes, or at least I reckon New Who is more inspired by this
than like Mondas and whatever. Absolutely,
and that, you know, those things that we find a bit more about their rationale. So, I mean, what's repeated over and over and over again is we must survive, we must survive.
Yeah,
so it's like the evolutionary imperative.
Yeah,
right.
But also we will spread and we will procreate in a way because you are now the next generation of Cybermen.
Exactly. So that on some level is a rationale for what the fuck they get up to.
Yeah.
It's basically our rationale.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, that's kind of cool. And the Cybermats are a cool thing.
Yeah.
I think they're cool.
I agree. I think they're awesome. But this one's completely ignored at this point. Yeah. And instead, they pull some levers, the wall hypnotizes the dude, and I think actually we cut over to the other room, where there's very clearly, like, insert a Cyberman here, like a Cyberman-shaped hole in the wall, and a massive, what looks like a laser gun, pointed at it.
And Kaftan makes the first of a series of unreasonably correct assumptions for a civilian. Right?
Okay. Like,
this is where they get recharged or something.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
It's like, how would you possibly know that?
Yeah, and the scientist just goes, oh my God, you're totally right.
Yeah.
What? Express some kind of just like surprise.
Oh shit, yeah. You're smarter than I thought.
Why didn't I think of that? Why wasn't that written for me? But yeah, so we are now in a room.
I think actually at that point that's a marker for us. One of the many markers.
Yeah, to be like, start to distrust her.
Oh yeah, you know too much.
Yeah. Okay, fine. So I was going to say, well, we're in a room that contains one professional scientist, one surreptitious scientist, and Victoria, who knows dick all. Like, she knows nothing, it seems.
Victoria, who's greatly named from the Victorian period.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I don't even have to make notes about this shit. It's like, who's Victoria? Oh, yeah, she's the girl from the 19th century. Brilliant. Moving on.
But okay, so you said this is the first hint at maybe she's an antagonist.
Well, at least
here.
One of them. One of the big major.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I agree with you. But it's not just that. Like, she pretty much just plonks Victoria in this Cyberman-shaped hole. And then, as the doctor is entering the room, pulls a lever, which closes it, like seals Victoria in there, and starts moving the laser thing around, or the energy gun, whatever, around. And the doctor never stops to think that this, you know, let's face it, weird foreign lady is clearly a psycho horse beast and should not be trusted.
What I don't understand is that, again, in this scene, when the scientist dude is trying to get Vicky out.
Yeah.
Kaftan actually shows what seems like genuine concern. Like, oh my God, she'll be killed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she also confesses to having pulled the lever.
Yeah, they try to work to get her out.
Really?
They absolutely do. And I was sitting there, I was like, this seems counterintuitive for what was, you know, for like...
Oh, interesting.
So nondescript evil lady, don't I?
Yeah, okay, fine, interesting. I interpreted that differently. Either way, we are very close to the end of episode one. How does episode one end? Do they go into
They go hypnotizing room.
Oh, you're right.
And wee little Jamie and his pal pull some levers.
Yeah.
And a Cyberman springs out and a Gatling gun. And shoots
the dude.
Yeah, shoots the honcho in the back.
And now he's dead.
Now he's dead. And that's end of episode
one. End of episode one, you're right.
What I like about that is that it's supposed to be some sort of misdirect or reveal where it's like, look, there's a Cyberman. It's like, it's literally part of the title of this episode. We've seen stencils everywhere.
Yeah.
Not really a reveal. Not in the way that Moonbase were when the fucking Cybermen turned up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, that's badass.
Yeah.
It could have just left them out and it could have just been some weird thing. We didn't need the stencils.
No, this would have been the equivalent of the Cyberman under the blanket.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Or maybe walking up to the TARDIS, whatever it is, in space, on the moon. Ugh, whatever. That's the biggest problem I have, actually, with these, let's name a serial one thing and then the individual episodes, just episode 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Biggest complaint.
Too much.
Yeah, it's a massive spoiler.
Yeah, the ice tombs of Telos would have been cool.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't heard of Telos before. Okay. Oh. All right. Shall we jump into episode 2?
Let's
do that.
Okay, so we're starting with Honcho being shot in the back, everyone rushes to his aid.
More or less, yeah. More or less. And Doctor also ascertains that the Cyberman that popped down is actually just basically a mannequin.
Yep.
And that this is a weapons testing facility. So this is now the Kid Peddler thing.
Also, that the reason he's ascertained that is because he doesn't have the organic component. So again, more hamming
exactly.
it up.
He says this is a purely robotic Cyberman. There's no human material in him at all.
Nothing to be worried about.
Oh.
Right. But yes, so the weapons testing facility.
Yeah.
And that Mr. Honcho's been shot in the back, which no one seems to have noticed. Or
yeah, and we also, actually, this is very fort Boyard. Before he ascertains, diagnoses this Cyberman as being purely robotic and thus, you know, harmless, he tricks the Gatling gun that comes out of the wall to quote-unquote kill it. By, like, pulling a lever and not standing in its way. So the only reason that Honcho died was because he actually, fake Cyberman was going to be killed by this thing. And Honcho just got in the way, right? So he tricks the system to kill this mannequin. Yeah.
What it was weird about this Honcho being shot and the doctor saying, he was shot in the back, not by the Cyberman, you should see. And it's like, and they turned him over. And he just had a plaid shirt on.
Yeah, there's nothing there. I remember thinking it's that like, as well. Like, with the amount of cyber blood that they add to this show later on, like, they could have at least painted him a darker shade of grey, you know? What's-his-face Jamie shows Doc the Cybermat, and Doc looks it up in a book. He looks it up in a book. I'm not sure. I've made a note to say, like, is that the 500-year diary? I'm not sure. Because there's, like, one of the Kodak moments of Troughton's Doctor. If you look up Patrick Troughton's Second Doctor on Google, is a picture of him holding, like, reading from his, quote, 500-year diary. Which, by the way, brings into question what he said before. Like, I'm roughly 450 years in Earth time. It's like, you write in a thing that is titled according to Earth time. Clearly, it's whatever. All right. Well, I'm not going to get into the details. But he looks up what a Cybermat is in some sort of book. And then we promptly forget about this book for the rest of the serial. And it seems like a fairly integral piece of literature. Like, is this some sort of weird cybernetic or alien? Is it like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Like, what is it that he has there?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, that comes back, doesn't it, as an idea?
Does it?
The idea there being a diary or some sort of...
Yeah, yeah, the diary shows up later. But it's never mentioned as a diary here. Yeah. If it were a diary, then presumably he would have gone like, oh, actually, I have encountered it before.
Right.
Like, I remember 300 years ago. Oh, that's what it was. It was a Cybermat. But like, he looks it up. It's basically an encyclopedia. And he looks up, oh, what is that? Oh, it's a Cybermat. It's some sort of little metallic creature, robot thing that was built by the Cybermen.
Bing bong, Future Ponkin here, again. How you doing? All good? Are you enjoying the show so far? Very nice, glad to hear it. Anyway, what I wanted to say was, I double-checked this on TARDIS Wikia, and it turns out this is not the Doctor's 500-year diary. All TARDIS Wikia has to say on the subject is, the Doctor has a book that he looks in to verify what the Cybermat is, and there are two sizes of Cybermats. That's it. We don't know what this book is. What is this book? Is it an encyclopedia of cybernetic organisms? Is it an anthropological breakdown of Cyberman society? We don't find out. What I'm guessing, though, is that if someone has read the novelization of this serial, then very possibly that's where the answer is to be found. I have a couple of potential listeners in mind for this, actually. If you are listening to me right now and you have read the novelization of Tomb of the Cybermen, then please... please do pop a comment on this reviews page on whobackwhen.com and let us know, because I am super duper goddamn curious. Okie dokie, thanks very much, back to the show.
So things start to get a bit more... this is where the group really splinters, right?
Yeah.
So they go back up to the control room.
Yeah.
To the control room, and there's a hatch in the middle of the control room.
Yeah.
And everyone's obsessed with opening it and getting down there.
What comes first, that or that we find out that the spaceship has been sabotaged?
Ooh... might be somewhere...
maybe I'm wrong.
No, you're right. You might be that way around, because... so, Toberman...
yeah.
Disappears for a little while and then comes back and says, it's done.
Oh, right.
That's him.
Oh, I totally missed that.
Yeah, that's him fucking up the spaceship. So that's when the Americans sod off for a little while to fix the ship, and he doesn't want anyone to come with him because he knows that someone might have fucked up the ship. And that's when...
They start thinking, we're going to be here anyway. Let's get into this hatch.
Yeah.
Okay. We also find out, I don't know if it's now, it might be later, but we find out that in order to repair the spaceship, Hobbs, or Hob, or whatever his name is, needs A, no one else to be around because he doesn't want them to get in the way, and B, he needs 72 hours. Let's put a pin in those 72 hours that he needs to fix his goddamn spaceship. It's like in 3 hours' time he's done. Fucking hob.
So, one thing leads to another. They pull some levers. Logic. Math. Open the hatch.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, I'm going to linger on this one as well. I might actually just cut some of the shit that I say in this one because I feel like I'm nitpicky, but... So the professor or one of the scientists, right?
Yeah.
He's figured out what the sequence is of levers to open the hatch, but it's wrong. And then the second time around, as he's pulling levers, surreptitiously, the doc goes in and presses a button. And it's wrong again. It doesn't work. So one assumes that the doctor, by pressing that button, is preventing him from opening the hatch, right? Like he's sabotaging it.
Yeah.
But then the professor goes, oh, actually, shit, now I realize what it was. I made that mistake. And he goes back and he redoes the sequence again, but now having altered it slightly in his mind, and that opens the hatch. So what did the doctor do? This is one tiny little plot point that ticks me off like crazy, makes no logical sense.
I have no idea.
It's like he's randomly just pressing buttons. And by sheer coincidence, the other guy figured out what he did wrong. Regardless. Okay, fine.
I mean, I was cool... When I was saying everything's cool with the science and the math.
Yeah.
But he also lost me a bit there. I was also a bit like, okay, I get it. Math. Move on.
Okay.
Anyway, so we open the hatch.
We open the hatch.
So with some of the team go down, some of the team stay up. Kaftan is wandering around looking shady and brown. And
I think she stays up with Vicky.
The doctor tasks Vicky with staying with Kaftan.
Oh, you're right,
looking after her. And Toberman's going to stay with them. And so the doctor says, well, if Tobin's staying, I'm staying.
Oh.
And Kaftan says, well, oh, of course, I'm being selfish. You should take Toberman. And Toberman sat there like, is anyone asking me?
I don't have any rights.
Yeah.
Or just a servant.
It's fucked up.
It's so gross. The whole thing is super duper racist.
So racist. Okay. So then they head down the hatch. Go for some exploring.
Yeah.
It's super cold down the hatch. It's
very cold, which is why, and this is my, I've written a question here for you. Where the shit did the doctor get a cape?
I was going to ask you the same thing, right? Because I feel, I there are a few of these serials that I've ducked out of at this point and stuff, and I was just like, does Trout wear a cape?
Like, he literally, you see him put on a cape here.
Yeah.
But it's not like he was carrying it around under his arm. Like, where did he get that cape from, man?
Maybe it's one of those, like, maybe it's like a super fold-upable cape and it's just in his back pocket, like a poncho.
Oh, maybe. Maybe his pocket is like a TARDIS.
Yeah. I mean, Time Lord, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, done.
All right, problem solved. You Sherlocked it. sorry, I interrupted you again.
So that cape's not going to do shit under there. It's so cold, apparently. It can't last a few minutes. But anyway, so everyone's gone down.
Yep.
Down the hole. Kaftan and Victoria are left. And Kaftan offers her some food.
Oh, yes.
Roast veal, beef, something else. Chicken, yeah.
Chicken, yeah.
She's eating chicken and then gives her this capsule. And do you know what's... I don't know if we get a payoff here or if I was misunderstanding, but... She pops the capsule into water, right?
No, I think she roofies Vic.
Yeah, you know. Is that what that was?
I think that's it. I think the capsule is like, it's literally just like a little block of, like a sugar cube of chicken.
Well, see, because I was hoping later, it's like, I should pop that. Oh, maybe that'll turn into a delicious.
I know, it's the same thing! Yeah,
like some
way.
Willy Wonka shit.
Yes! one defrosts a pizza like you, Mom.
Exactly! Exactly that! It's some bullshit. There was not a payoff there. Anyway, yeah, she roofies Victoria. Victoria passes out. She shuts them. Up to that, or at least parallel, I don't know if this is before or whatever, the rest of the expedition have come across the quote-unquote tombs of the Cybermen.
Not that many of them.
Like nine.
Is it just me?
Yeah. Like nine Cybermen. Like nine.
Exactly. My thought was like, I'm imagining like just an underground city of catacombs. Like,
are we supposed to imagine that?
I don't know. We only get to see this one wall and at any given time. There are only nine Cybermen. I'm pretty sure we could see more Cybermen on screen in one go in the moon base.
Like that it's like a silhouette of a bordello. like, and just pick your favourite Cyberman to go to bed with that. Like a New Orleans bordello.
I mean, it's in black and white, but that whole thing had red lights all over.
Absolutely. Anyway, they figure out how to defrost the Cybermen briefly. The Cybermen do their sexy dance in their, like, honeycomb womb bordello.
I had a bone up that entire sequence. Right?
And then someone says, quick, refreeze them again, because this shit is crazy.
Are you insane? Yeah, yeah, it's, what's his face? Klieg is the one who's defrosting them, right? And then Doc notices it and goes like, you're insane. Like, what the fuck are you doing? But the thing is, like, Klieg, the first thing he does is he goes to this massive set of levers. Like, at this point, please realize that if there's a control panel with levers, it's probably gonna either open, close, or maneuver something fucking dangerous and cybery.
Yeah.
Yeah. This thing is close to only one thing, frozen Cybermen. What do you think Klieg's up to?
Trying to get Sky Sports.
Where you they are on a in a different area altogether from the control room upstairs. Mm. And Klieg's alibi is that this is going to open the hatch upstairs.
Yes.
That's his alibi.
That's his alibi.
That makes no sense. He's standing right next to the tombs. Obviously, it's a defrosting machine. It's a microwave. That's what it is.
Why did they defrost him all the way? I forget.
I don't know.
Yuckity yucks, just for kicks, just for shits and giggles. Why?
I can't remember. Isn't it? Okay, I feel like the Doctor and Co. are somehow put under duress. Is it Toberman? Maybe Toberman threatens them. Because the Doctor stops Klieg.
Oh, yeah.
The Kliegmeister from doing it. And then Klieg goes, what up, bruh? I'm going to do this anyway. And his enabler, I think, is Toberman.
There is absolutely a scene where Toberman threatens both the Doc and Jamie.
That must be it then. No! He has a gun and he shoots someone.
Shit! He shoots someone and then he's a murderer.
Yeah.
Which, I love this shit because that guy, the expedition guy, keeps accusing people of being a murderer. Or Klieg and so stuff. You're a murderer. It's like, he just murdered someone. I think he's okay with that. And I think it's like, oh shit, am I? Oh my god,
I didn't realise.
Oh god.
Wait, hang on, can someone explain the concept of self-defence to me? I thought I was morally in the clear.
It's like, yes, yeah, he knows he's heinous. He's got it. He's fine with it.
Yeah. So he shoots some dude, honcho number two, defrost the cybers. Yeah, and then all these cybers show up and they just sort of walk past them, I guess. And then, oh wait, hang on. Cyber controller. Boom. Okay.
This is the first iteration of the cyber controller?
This is the very, very first iteration.
Why has the cyber controller got a worse suit than the normal Cyberman?
He looks like a conehead.
He looks like the hobo Cyberman. Like, you know, yeah, it doesn't look...
Maybe he's just older. He starts speaking to this chap, Klieg, and we find out that he is a member of the Brotherhood of Logicians.
Yes. It's not a thing.
Well, it turns out all these foreigners are... I mean, okay, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, we keep mentioning foreigners. We're not being racist. We're just pointing out how racist this episode is.
How Kit Peddler is racist. And slightly, I feel like this specifically is Islamophobic. Kaftan, as it were. Yes. And yeah, the Brotherhood of... Come on, man.
I didn't feel like that was a thing. I felt like Brotherhood of Logicians was almost like an evil... Like, it was like the Illuminati. You know?
I don't know. Muslim Brotherhood? That's a thing.
Yes, that is a thing.
I'm just saying, I don't know how Kit Predler was trying to be racist. I just know that he was really trying to be racist.
Do you think that I looked up the Brotherhood as well, and they never reappear. The
Brotherhood of Logicians?
Yeah. They appear once in all of the two.
All they do is go to conferences and talk about, like, peer-reviewed journals every year. They don't do shit like this, like, try to take over the world. It's not on their mission statement. It's not part of
Did you steal my sheet of progressive matrices?
Yes.
Do you think that all of the Brotherhood is, like, this evil organization, or do you think that these are two members? Because clearly Toberman is not a member of the Logicians. He's just the henchman, right?
Right.
So do you think these two are just, like, evil dudes, or one dude and dudettes, who think that they want the Brotherhood to be reshaped into something evil and omnipotent?
The only way I can think of it, because like I said, a bunch of logicians in a room is just a conference of academics.
Nothing evil about it.
And I've been to some of those and no one's taken over the world. No. They're cool. They're flying with some second grade wine and some canapes. They're fine.
Okie dokie.
Okay, so he's trying to bargain with the
Cyberman or Cyber Controller.
Because, so again, this is where the science sort of goes. It's like, he's got all the logic and stuff. He needs power.
Mm.
And not like power like muscle or intimidate or like political or strategic power. He seems to mean actual fucking power, like energy.
Oh, really?
Right? There's like a power system or some shit they keep talking about.
I was thinking, like, is he turning this dude into another controller? Like, he was going to be the leader. I think this is later on, actually.
This is later on.
Yeah.
Initially, logician guy, Eric.
Klieg.
Eric Klieg.
Kliegmeister.
Yeah, Kliegmeister.
Kleggy.
Kliegon.
Kliegon.
Tries to reason with it. Tries to get this out of them.
Yeah. Clearly, the Brotherhood of Logicians should do their homework. His ideas, not in any way, like, intimidate the Cybermen. His idea is, like, I'm just going to reason with them. And they're just going to see that I'm a really cool dude.
I'm cool.
And then they're
going to
give us power.
Yeah. And then so the Cybermen go, actually, this was part of our plan.
Yeah.
To get you here. You're obviously smart enough. We're going to make a whole new set of Cybermen.
Can I jump into a soundbite here?
Yes.
20 minutes in, I think we have the very first instance of an alien species theme on Doctor Who. Because I think we hear the exact same music that we heard in 10th Planet and or Moonbase.
You are so right.
Oh my
God. Sounded exactly the same. Alternatively, they don't sound like anything like each other. You're terrible.
I'm pretty sure. Okay, whatever. Listen to it after the post-production bit. Yeah, pretty sure, because I don't think... Do we have a Dalek theme?
No.
Maybe we do, actually. I don't really remember there being one, but...
Not that I'm aware of. You're going to have to find someone more informed on the subject. Yeah.
JD.
Drew would be good at this.
All right, shall we cut upstairs?
Let's go back upstairs. So, drugged Vicky and closed hatch is now the scenario.
Yeah.
Vicky comes to.
Yeah.
It's like, how long have I been out? Where am I? What am I doing? Yep. Why is the hatch closed? Where the fuck is everyone?
At which point, what's-her-face, Kaftan, pulls a gun on her, I think.
Yes. Well, when Vicky realises that everyone's down there, gonna freeze, whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She says, I'm gonna get them out there, and yeah.
Yeah, she wants to start pulling levers or whatever. She wants to rescue them.
I mean, actually, when you watch it back, so she pulls a gun on her whilst Vicky's got her back turned. Right?
Okay.
And it seems like Vicky just intuits the idea that there's a gun right there. Doesn't touch it. Doesn't, like, put a gun right up to her ribs.
Oh, I...
Just sort of, like, turns. She gets a gun. It's like...
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I completely blanked on this one.
As a Victorian lady, I can sense a gun. it's my power. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. I missed that. At which point, the Cyberman springs to life.
Yes.
So the hitherto completely, quote-unquote, fossilized, the lifeless Cybermats in her bag. She actually pocketed it, I think. Mm. She popped it in a bag. It now escapes. And I don't know how they did it, like if it's pulled with a string or whatever, but it looks freaking badass. I love it.
I really don't get... No, they look so awful. like the stuck-on sticky eyes and shit. It's terrible.
I love how this thing is like moving.
It would have
been
so much better if it was just like a metal capsule with like two dots on it. But no, it was like, it had like eyes and shit. It's like out of fucking Vino.
Absolutely love it.
Anyway, she's screaming for her life. And
this thing is beeping like shit.
And Kaftan is like, don't be stupid. Do you think I was born yesterday?
She's like, look behind you, and this thing is making more noise than your run-of-the-mill zombie. It is super loud.
Do you know who I am? I'm essentially Jafar from Aladdin in female terms. Anyway. So Cybermat attacks Kaftan.
Vicky steals Kaftan's gun and then proves...
And fucking Annie Oakley's this bitch.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Bingo bongo, right?
Yeah.
This is Sliced Alone. Yeah. This is her.
This is Sliced Alone.
Fucking Cobra Cabrini's the shit out of the Cybermen.
I do not accept the premise that in, not only as a human, but in any of his roles, was he a crack shot at anything. He sprayed rooms down.
Okay, fine. You know what? She goes full on Tom Berenger. And with one shot, kills the Cybermen. Tom Berenger, sniper.
Okay, fine. crazy shot.
Yeah.
Presumably never held a gun in her life.
No, you would assume so, right? I mean, she's a nice girl. And she was in the last serial, she was, like, somewhere between helpless and useless. Like, she was just there to be the damsel in distress.
And now she's capping asses.
Yeah. Hot. Cut back downstairs, the cliffhanger is, you're all going to be cyberdined. Done.
And you, Eric...
Oh, this is the thing.
Eric... Klingon, will be the leader because you're the smartest.
Yeah.
Except for the Doctor, who we, in our memory banks, we know you're really clever.
Oh, you're right. You're right. They say, we know who you are. We have, like, an actual digital record of who you are. Why aren't they cyber-leadering him? God damn it, man. I blame you.
Sorry, podcast. This isn't great dialogue, but this is me just shaking my head. I have nothing to offer any of these questions.
Ugh. All right.
Maybe they've intuited you knew who we were and you still came down here, you fuckwit. You cannot be the leader.
You're right.
Yeah.
Whereas Klingy here clearly manipulated you into doing his bidding. Yeah. All right, end of episode 2. We are now halfway through this bad boy. Episode 3. Let's speed through this.
Okay. What happens in episode 3?
Episode 3 starts with another soundbite. 2 minutes in. Just skipping those first 2 minutes, because who gives a shit? This is Hot Vic going,
please stop calling me Vic!
Because she's upstairs, the Americans have showed up, they're calling her Vic. And this is, I'm only bringing this up because it's the opposite of former companion, Vicky, aka Vic's Vapor Rob on the podcast, who, when she was introduced, was like, it's V-I-C-K-I, not short for Victoria. And here we have Victoria, who doesn't want to be called Vic.
Nice.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So she's convincing the Americans that everyone's trapped in the things. Help me get this latch open, the hatch open. And they first don't believe her and then just suddenly do.
I missed that as well.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, downstairs, there's like a full-on fight erupting, right?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I can't remember how this happened.
It was the most annoying set of sounds.
Oh, really?
Like, I don't know if you want to sound like any of this, but it was just like, blah, 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 blah. Blah, 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 blah. It's like a jazz band fell down a flight of stairs. That's what happens.
I'm going to put a soundbite in the middle of that.
Blah, blah, blah. It's fucking awful.
And in that bit, this is definitely going to be screenshotted. There is the most, did you see this? The most obvious wire attached to the belt of the guy. When, like, we get a Cyberman lifting up a dude.
Yes.
A Toberman attack.
Toberman, yeah. Yes. So Toberman, this is the thing. So Toberman's strength as this noble savage, fucking Kip Hedler, has been like, you know, you see it from the first frame of him opening the doors to all the way through.
Yeah.
But that's one of the key components. He's strong.
Yeah.
He's like the Hulk.
We even
he's
get like
the Brown Hulk, right?
Yeah, he is the Brown Hulk. There are even clips of him just flexing his muscles. Oh.
So at one point, so he's holding his own against the Cyberman, and then the Cyberman just like picks him up like he's a fucking can of pop. Like,
yeah.
It's like nothing.
Why
were you struggling for so long? You could just pick this man up. Like he's
But aren't the Cybermen even struggling against like regular sized humans? But also, I don't even remember how they started fighting. Why are they fighting?
They're fighting because of they said they're going to be...
They're going to Cyberdyne them, but like, what are they going to do? Like, well, you're effed now, guys. Like, these dudes are huge, they're made out of metal. Yeah, whatever they want goes. Okay, fine. Meanwhile, upstairs, let's just revisit something that happened in episode 1 or 2. No, 2. It took the... Not Parry, the other professor guy. Let's just call him Professor 2. It took that professor...
Associate professor.
The associate professor. And the doctor, cooperating in some weird fashion, 3 or 4 attempts to, over a long period of time, pull levers in a particular sequence in order to open the hatch.
Mm.
At this point, Captain Hobbs, who is just your run-of-the-mill grunt / spaceship engineer, pulls one lever, hatch opens.
/ cowboy.
He pulls one lever.
Well, maybe. Okay, here it is. Here I am.
Oh, here so I am. Here it's I been am. Unlocked and now it's just an on-off switch.
No. The sequence was there in place, right? So let's say it was a sequence of 6 things. 5 of the things were there.
Mm-hmm.
Kaftan pulls the last thing, or one of the things, to undo the sequence, closing the hatch. So it's just a matter of flipping the one sequence on. Makes sense.
I see what you're saying, but what's-his-face associate professor had to undo all of his levers in episodes 2 and then redo all the levers from the get-go.
Maybe he's just perfectionist. Maybe he's just like a freaky OCD guy and he's under, you know, he's just like, needs to switch.
My Asperger's will not allow me to just pull one lever.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably it.
Okay, so Hobbs now goes downstairs because he is a natural-born badass.
Yeah, people make an escape, right?
Yeah, they make an escape. Toberman does not, though. He's caught.
No, he's done.
I quite like that they had to electrozap him twice, by the way.
Yeah.
And they even go like, he's a big guy. Let's keep him.
He's
Let's
strong.
Make use of him.
Yeah.
I quite like that. Oh, and Klieg is also downstairs. So, like, the two male foreigners They're downstairs.
Yeah.
All right. And then we get the return of the Cybermats.
The return of the Cybermats, they're all dozing upstairs. They're all sleeping. They're all taking it in shifts, right? Or something to sleep. And then the Doctor notices they're a Cybermat. Oh, no.
Downstairs.
The, Cybermen, say, well, this is what we'll do. And they figured out, they introduce us to full Cybermats.
Yeah, exactly. So these are slightly bigger. Mm. They've got a tail. Do you think the Cybermats are like just metallic drones? Or do you think that they are cybered bristletails, silverfish?
I really don't. I mean, I assumed that they were vessels for cybering, like portable cybering things. Like, because otherwise, what function did they serve?
That's a really good point. Like, what were they going to do?
I assume
one of them tried to attack, like, bites.
Well, see,
what's
I assumed, and this was some crude version of nanotechnology
from Borg. Yeah,
absolutely, that same shit.
You get bitten by one of those, and you turn into
cybering. Which I thought that's where it was heading down with the caftan. I thought Kaftan would end up being a cyber.
Oh, interesting.
But that didn't happen.
Oh,
no. So we missed a bit where Cybermen were grabbing ankles as everyone's heading out of the hatch. And then they close
the hatch. You're right. Like, they decide we're going to save the bad guys anyway.
Yeah.
They don't save Toveman. Toveman's downstairs, but they do save
Pleaky.
I
like the logic of saving the bad men, the bad foreigners, was it's more dangerous to have them down here than up here.
Oh, yeah. The Doctor says that. Why? Explain that to me, please. You can't open the hatch from downstairs. Which, by the way, why would they not make a... Like, why would the Cybermen not put an extra lever to open the hatch from downstairs?
I don't know. I mean, but that logic was so faulty. Let Cleek die. Fuck him. He killed a man in front of you.
I guess the assumption is, what they're trying to insinuate is that Cleek's intelligence, paired with the strength of the Cybermen, that is enough to somehow get them to not only escape from the hatch, but also take over the world or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, they would be stuck underneath that hatch because they couldn't even... Because the Cybermen weren't clever enough to build a goddamn doorknob. Anyway. So they rescue him. They put Kleegi and Kaftan in the weapons testing facility.
Yeah.
And, sorry, just speeding through this now.
Yeah.
So just speeding through this. The weapons testing facility, where there is a weapon that was being tested, and now obviously they have that weapon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cleek. This is some bullshit. Kaftan and Cleek say, with this we can rule the world.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. With no more thought than that?
Just one tiny gun?
It's like, oh, now I'm invulnerable. It's like,
no, you are just carrying what you refer to as a small X-ray laser, by the way, whatever the hell that is. X-rays and lasers are very different things. That's not going to help you save the world or, like, rule the world. In fact,
that doesn't make you invulnerable.
No. Okay, so I'd like to soundbite something else here, if I may. And it is a Doctor soundbite. He has this little soliloquy about how time travellers are slightly special.
You can't understand being so ancient.
Eh?
I mean old.
Oh.
You probably can't remember your family.
Oh, yes, I can when I want to. And that's the point, really. I have to really want to bring them back in front of my eyes. The rest of the time, they sleep in my mind, and I forget. And so will you. Oh, yes, you will. You'll find there's so much else to think about, to remember. Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
Yeah, it's actually a really nice,
it's really nice.
1 minute or something.
Yeah, consolation. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, and just amid all the chaos and weird science of this episode, there's this brief glimpse of just profound beauty.
That's Jerry. That's Jerry.
That's Jerry.
That's Jerry. It's Jerry all day. It's all Jerry.
Okay.
Let's speed through this. So, yeah. Klingon's got a gun. And he's threatening everyone.
Yep.
And he thinks that he can now threaten the Cybermen into helping him take over the world.
Yeah, pretty
Which
much.
He does to a certain extent. He threatens them, they acquiesce.
Pretty much. I think that's already into the next episode.
Ah.
In this, I think this episode ends with
the gun.
The gun, yeah.
Oh, he comes out and he's like, I'm going to shoot the Doctor.
Yeah, you think that he shoots the Doctor.
Yeah.
And it ends on the gunshot of his X-ray laser. And fucking hell, I don't know where this fits in, but I want to pop in another soundbite because it's the Doctor pulling just the best pun ever. Here you go.
Are they safe now?
Well, yes, quite safe now. The power cable generated an electrical field and confused their tiny metal minds. You might almost say they've had a complete metal breakdown.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's so good.
I didn't. Oh my days.
End of episode 3, episode 4. Okay. Final episode.
So, yes, as we said, Klingon shots what we thought was the Doctor, but wasn't the Doctor. Someone in jumped in and saved the day.
Honcho 3.
Honcho 3. then Klingon Kaftan reveal their master plan.
Yep.
They go get some Cybermen.
Yeah, I think they just open the hatch and go, toodaloo, guys, come up.
Yeah. I've got this gun. You're afraid of this gun.
I now rule you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Does he kill the cyber leader? Because at some point the cyber leader...
Later on.
Yes.
That's, I think, like the end of the episode. Yeah. Spoilers.
Sorry.
But like it's Cyber Controller and Torbemann who show up upstairs.
Oh, yes.
And he goes, well, let Torbemann go. No one notices that Torbemann is all of a sudden like wearing a poncho, yep. Which... And sort of conceals the fact that he has a massive goddamn robot arm.
Love his robot arm and his three-pronged yeah, glove. <exactly. laughs> Like, in the future, we will only need three digits. You won't be able to drink out of mugs.
We have the best chopsticks in the world attached to our massive robot arms. And like, but yeah, so what's his face, Torbemann, with his new poncho, which no one remarks on, and his enormous robot arm, which no one notices, walks around, doesn't say a word, is even more taciturn than he was in the first place, and no one notices. No one, like, says, like, are you okay, man? Like, what did they do to you down there? Are you okay? Nice poncho. You are totes malotes on the spectrum, buddy. Say something.
I really
something.
Love your new watch. I mean, arm. Okay, so Klieg is allowing the cyber controller to go charge up because he's running low on power.
This is my Vicky stays with me because I need to bone her note.
Right.
Because the Kliegmeister... Is it Klieg or is it Kleep?
Klieg.
Klieg. The Kliegmeister goes, Doc, Jamie, Honcho number 4, what's your face? Dude with glasses, you're going in there with the cyber controller to, you know, plug him into the wall. Vicky, you're staying with me. Literally no other reason besides wanting to bone her.
The controller, now revitalized and to fully strength, breaks out handily from his sarcophagus.
Thus, by the way, breaking the only, as far as we know, the only available device that is designed to recharge Cybermen.
It's like when you forget your charger at someone's house or you break it and that's the only charger in your house for your fucking phone. And your phone is at tip-top condition at that point. So you know.
It's going to run out. Yeah.
It's a bitch. Anyway, so the controller overpowers everyone. Torbemann knocks Klieg unconscious. I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Under the new, because he's under cyber control.
Okay.
And the controller picks up Klieg's cyber gun.
All right.
Which, by the way, why the fuck is it called a cyber gun? Because earlier, Kaftan was like,
it's
a gun.
It's an
X-ray laser. And dude was like, it's a cyber gun.
It's like, a cyber gun. Yeah.
Why? What's with the prefix?
Did we have an equivalent of this in the moon base or possibly the 10th planet? Maybe. This is the Kit Peddler equivalent of the Terry Nation trope of adding space as a prefix to everything.
Kaftan tries shooting it with a normal gun. And he's like, your normal gun has no effect on me.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then the controller fucking ices her, like gangland style. Fucking
oh, you're
her.
Right. He has his own cyber gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's from here. This is the pivotal moment.
This is, yeah, sorry.
Somehow, for some reason, Torbemann has some weird deep well of feeling for his master.
Yeah.
And the doctor says,
I mean,
the doctor sort of wanders up, puts a thing in his ear and says, look at what they've done. They've killed Kaftan. You need to help us. You're a man, sort of, if I squint. yeah. And then Torbemann then breaks through from his psychic hold. And
I suppose so. So it's actually, yeah. So, and then we get that incredibly brutal scene of him picking up the cyber controller. It must be the cyber controller.
The cyber controller.
And throwing him across the room onto a control panel.
Yeah.
And it's super brutal. The head comes off a little bit in this clip.
Yeah.
Possibly a blooper, by the way, but still. Like, I mean, they kept it. Then we head downstairs.
Yes, because we want to make sure those Cybermen stay where they fucking belong.
Goddamn right we do.
Or something like that.
For some reason, Kleeb is in charge. Because my next note is the Doc panders to Kleeb's ego. And why would he need to do that, right?
No. Kleeg isn't in charge. He regains consciousness after being knocked out.
Right.
And sort of surreptitiously makes his way down as well.
Oh, really?
So it's not until Kleeg's pandering, that whole part, is when Kleeg is fucking about with controls and saying that now I'm going to... I think Clea picks up a gun or some shit.
We get that scene of like, someone, probably the Doc, puts the gun on the table. We pan to the gun. We see Doc stepping away. I wonder if the bad guy's going to pick up the gun.
And so Clea, at this juncture, is like, well, there's no cyber controller, so I'll be the cyber controller.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. He's lost it.
Yeah, he's gone full Kanye. So he thinks that he's the mega genius overlord. And the Doctor's pandering
is hilarious.
Is very funny. That was particularly great as a thing.
Shall we soundbite it?
Let's.
It's a really nice one. Soundbite.
Eric Cleve's own conception of the way of life.
Brilliant. Yes. Yes, you're right. Master of the world.
Well, now I know you're mad. I just wanted to make sure.
He just takes it back.
Yeah,
like that.
I just wanted to know how fucking mental you were. That's cool.
So then the fake American returns, upstairs anyway.
Yeah.
And just sort of announces that he repaired their spaceship, even though a couple of hours earlier, tops, he said that it would take him 72 hours minimum.
Yep.
Yeah. Cut back downstairs. We now have a massive human versus Cyberman brawl.
Yeah.
Like a crazy goddamn fight in which Toberman, and this is actually kind of an important thing, because this really, really ticked off the censors in 1967. Mm. There's a scene where he picks up, he does the thing where he picks up a Cyberman and just Jason Statham's him, and like
rips open his breathing.
Exactly, like there's shaving foam or whatever, like just pouring out of his chest thingy. Particularly that liquid pouring out of the Cyberman's chest was apparently a point of some contention among censors, mm-hmm. and led to a dialogue about, do we need to change the way that we produce Doctor Who because it's actually not suitable for children or families.
Oh, right. So whilst this is happening, whilst Toberman's tearing people open, or Cybermen open, Jamie and the Doc are refreezing all the Cybermen.
Yes. And that scene, did you notice this? It's the exact same scene we saw when they got out of the hatch in reverse.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Because they break out through cling film, and in this one, they break in through cling film.
Okay, so Cybermen are refreezed, Control is dead, one Cyberman's dead, Toberman's
Control is not dead. We think the Control is dead.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Everyone's back upstairs, Hooper's fixed the spacecraft or whatever, and everyone's heading out. The Doc says, I'm going to stick around to make sure all the security is tight. Vicky and Jamie, I feel like a burgeoning romance going on.
I was
going
to say he wants to put his hand up her skirt, but she wants to put her hand up his kilt.
It is. But she goes off. Jamie stays with the Doc. And he says that I'm going to re-electrify the doors, but also the hatch and the control panel. So it kills anyone that tries to do this, like us.
Unless, of course, I repeat what I did at the start of this serial and just let you in again. I mean, I don't see him breaking the device that he used to de-electrify the door, right? He still has it. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
So fine, the doors are now electrified. What's-his-face cyber controller wakes up and starts zombie-like
lurching towards them, yeah.
Exactly, towards the exit/entrance. The doors are too heavy to close, and also, if you touch them at this point, you will be
electrocuted. Close them, their circuit will complete and they'll be electrified.
Exactly. And Toberman, now, he basically pulls a Kemal from Evil of the Daleks. As the taciturn hulk of a man who is a foreigner and who has been kind of a bad guy up until this point, suddenly redeems himself by going, I will sacrifice myself. I will do this for you and you will live. And in fact, sorry, podcast land, check this out. Kemal's affection for Victoria kind of mirrors Toberman's affection for Kaftan. So anyway,
savage.
Yeah. So Toberman closes the doors, is electrocuted.
As is the cyber controller.
As is the cyber controller, you're right. And
she doesn't make loads of sense, but okay.
Yeah, true. And then they basically just sort of leave. Is there some sort of end quote from the Doc where he goes like, well, you know, we'll never see them again, except we probably will.
The Doc says, Jamie says, well, that's the last we'll see of them or something. And is this the last we'll ever see of them? And Doc says, I don't like to make predictions or something.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, duh, 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 Cyberman, clearly the new baddie.
Yeah.
As we exit this serial, we get to see a Cybermat having survived outside of the tomb. Mm. So there's clearly cyber technology there. But also, just one final note about this. Toberman has a Cyberman arm, okay? He has a Cyberman arm, and fine, his flesh is electrocuted, but he has a Cyberman arm, okay? and they just leave him there. Even though clearly, under any realistic circumstances, they would drag his cybernetic carcass to Earth and then just totes District 9 him. I mean,
that's awful.
Right? Yeah. That's exactly what they would do.
That's exactly what they would do.
Oh.
Okay.
End of two of the Cybermen.
Wow. Serial.
I have no idea what I'm giving this.
Yes.
Do you want to start off?
Yes, I will.
Reviews.
Okay, so generally speaking, actually, recanting it, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would have.
Told you so, right?
When I got through it, actually, some of the elements were cool. Sci-fi, as we talked about, was cool, and sort of that math part of it. I didn't like the sort of dual enemies. The enemy from within, in terms of the shady foreigners.
Yeah.
And the enemy as the Cybermen.
Interesting.
Because it was so racist. I couldn't really get on board with it. I know it's of its time in some bullshit, but I don't think it's even of its time. I think it was racist at the time. I don't know. Fairly two-dimensional in lots of ways. Lots of the characters and stuff. Victoria was mostly good when she wasn't screaming. I don't know. I literally couldn't get over that first big plot hole. Why are we here? Why are we here? Why has this happened?
We should never go in. Let me let you in.
It would have been much better if somehow they'd figured out to get into the tomb by themselves.
And the doctor tries to stop them but can't, maybe?
Or the doctor turned up after they'd already found their way in.
Yeah.
And be like, fuck, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I can think of a million different ways of rewriting that.
And, plenty of things. But Troughton was good. Still very good.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying Troughton.
How would you compare this? Because you were on both of the prior Cyberman, yes. Classic Cyberman.
This is
reviews.
Not. They're getting worse.
Really?
Well, no. So Mondas was good.
Mondas was awesome, dude.
Moonbase is better. Does that correlate with my ratings?
I'm going to look it up. I'm just thinking God. That. I don't remember.
I'm not sure. I had a lot more fun with Moonbase. That was hilarious shit. That was a very funny review. But either way, I was captivated by the badass Cybermen in those. In this iteration, I don't think they were half as badass.
Yeah, okay.
You know? I did find, especially, they went a bit too much with the math and the guys sort of... The Cybermen's motivation, just wanting to procreate and propagate, was way clearer.
Yeah.
That dude, the logician, you know, Eric Klieg, didn't really get what the fuck he was up to. I just want to rule the world.
Yeah.
Why, Eric?
I agree. I completely agree with you.
Don't really understand that. Okay. Right.
Can I just say, before you give your rating, yeah. I've got both of our ratings from the last two Cybermen reviews. 10th Planet, you gave it 2.9. I gave it 3.8.
Oh.
I love the shit out of that one.
Yeah.
I'm still jerking off to it. And then the next one... Definitely cutting that. The next one, Moonbase, we both gave it 4.0.
See, yeah, that's how I feel. That's absolutely how I feel. Not as good as Moonbase. More comparable to Mondas.
Okay.
But the thing is, it's going to be less than Mondas because we have now some backstory. So it had to be better, but it wasn't. So I'm going to go 2.5.
2.5?
2.5.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Fine, I'm going higher than that. I agree with you, though. It's not as good as Moonbase. Moonbase had a certain je ne sais quoi. This one, however, there came a point, actually, right at the start. So the very opening scene that's like, hey, here's Victoria getting to know the TARDIS. I thought that was garbage. But then the next scene, the next clip, is that gorgeous dolly shot of Toberman walking towards like the crevasse. And down there is the rest of the dig.
Mm.
From that point on, it was... a totally badass serial. It seemed more professional. It seemed like it was like it had higher production values. They had really cared about cinematography and all kinds of shenanigans. I loved it. And I'm going to disagree with you on one point. You didn't like the inner and outer baddies.
Well, not that I didn't like that as an idea. I didn't like the execution.
Okay.
I don't think it was very good.
I mean, I agree with you about the racist component of it. I hate that. I think that's ridiculous from the get-go. But I love the fact that we've got like, oh, actually one of the good guys is actually one of the bad guys. And they're sort of in competition with the other bad guys. I think that's, I mean, it's just more interesting in terms of the writing than what we saw in, for example, I think, the 10th Planet. It's as though we would have had one of the soldiers in the team cooperate with the Cybers.
Yeah, it could have been more nuanced, though. Like, at no point did they actually have any real alliance.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
So it was just competing. Like, actually,
yeah.
It wasn't nuanced. I don't know.
No.
It was basically, who had the gun?
Yes, and that would be another thing to rate this down for. The motivation of what's-his-face, Kliegemeister, his motivation just sort of seems to change. And Kaftan's motivation is, she's just there to be on his arm in a way. Like,
yeah, what was the point? Because when I started, when the first like episode or two, I thought Kaftan was the...
Leader. Right? She is clearly like the leader. And then all of a sudden, she just turns into this fairly expendable antagonist who kind of just plays second fiddle to, what's-his-face, Kliege. And Kliegemeister... Kliegemeister goes from, I am a representative of the Brotherhood of Logicians because I am that goddamn clever. Like, we are evil Mensa. And then all of a sudden, he gets a cyber gun, an X-ray laser, which means nothing, and he is just turned into a drone. It's just, it's as you said, who has the gun? The Cybermen, I love them. Cyber Controller as a concept, love it. Yeah. Nice to see them. Cybermats as a concept, love them. And also, I love all the little installments of, here we have the hypnosis room, here we have the weapons room, here we have the freezing room, here we have, like, it's all very science-y.
Yep.
But the science makes no sense, so I'm rating it down for that as well. What did I give the last ones? 3.8 and 4.0? Or 3.9 and 4.0? Oh, shocking, getting the ding. I'm giving this a shitballs. I'm giving this a 3.5.
That high?
Okay, yeah, because I love the hell out of this.
Okay. Listener mini. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a listener mini. Although, it's more of a maxi.
It is a maxi.
Thanks very much, Trenton, for giving us this review. We're going to read out some of the more salient points, and the rest of it we'll post online in its entirety.
Yes, definitely. Ladies and gentlemen, seriously, have a look at this review, this maxi review online. Thank you so much for sending it in, Trenton. It is definitely a maxi review, which is why we're not going to spend 50 minutes reading it now. But just to whet your appetites, in addition to what we will read out, there is some mucho grande style trivia in this review. So for that alone, I'm not even going to tell you what it is. You have to go to whobackwhen.com and read it.
So, start us off, Liam.
Okie dokie, starting off sort of in the middle of his review.
In the middle, yeah.
Jamie and Victoria were very good alongside the Doctor. It's also notable that Kliege, who counts as the secondary villain, was brilliant. He wanted the Cybermen for their logic, as he was a logical man himself. I also like how logical the villains, Cybermen, went about things. I mean, the way the tombs were set up and how to access them the way you needed to. It was brilliant. I completely goddamn agree with you, dude.
I less agree, but okay. More Trenton. I'm so glad this story exists in its entirety, because if not, then you couldn't admire the sets and props. Very true, they were gorgeous,
yeah,
mostly.
Were.
It's interesting what you can do with a budget, styrofoam and a tinfoil. It's also a great story, and it's perfect for Victoria first outing in the TARDIS. Yeah, no, that's all good. Yeah, very much like the honeycomb bit.
The honeycomb, sorry, Trenton, we're totally interrupting your thing here. The honeycomb is like the Kodak moment of this serial.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yep.
And in fact, I think it was the only image of this serial that I'd seen whatsoever, but I totally do not agree with him regarding Victoria. Sorry, man.
Oh, no, I'm into it.
Really?
I think that goes 0 to 100, Victoria. Straight into peril, straight into terrible.
Yeah, but then right
time.
Back to zero again.
I like that.
She has that one Sliced Alone / Tom Berenger moment.
Oh,
no,
not for Victoria, but as an experience. If you're just like, okay, you were in, you know, Victorian England. Now here's some metal menaces.
Yeah, dump her in the deep end. Oh, I look forward to seeing where she's going, but I'm not quite impressed yet. Anyway, Trenton goes on. Overall, I love this story. This was my introduction to Troughton. Ooh. Though it's not my favourite Troughton serial. It's my favourite Cyberman serial by far. Not only that, but this serial is the only Cyberman story from the 60s that exists in its entirety. So, I'm giving this story a 4.5 out of 5. It's just that good. I have nothing but praise for this story.
Look at that.
Yeah, it's got a big heart. 4.5.
That's surprising. Okay, cool. Well, no, I mean,
Yeah.
That very much, Trenton's review very much talks to what you said at the top of the podcast about it being quite a canon, you know, quite a seminal.
It is, yes. And, and not just that, I can totally understand. If this is Trenton's introduction to Troughton, this was one of Patrick Troughton's favourite stories.
Ah.
This and, weirdly, the previous one, Evil of the Daleks.
Pardon?
Yeah. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, his review doesn't even end there. There's sort of a PS to it, so check it out. Trenton, thank you so much for sending in this mini-review, this maxi-review.
We look forward to the next one.
Yeah. And in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, you can high-five Trenton online. He is on Twitter, at TrentonBless. That's Bless, with two S's. Bing bong.
Review over?
Are you on Twitter, Nick?
I'm not.
Are you actually just done with being endorsed?
I am. Actually, no, I'm back. From my last, from my slightly more apathetic version of it last time, you can get at me. It might not be all that interesting, but I'll say, hey, what's up? I'm at Nickelaley. It's like nickel, but ukulele.
That makes sense. And you can hit me up on Twitter as well. High five me, I will high five you back. I'm at Ponk, and here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
Thank you so much for listening. Our next reviews coming up.
Shakespeare Code.
Shakespeare Code for New Who. For Classic Who, it's Yetis! Finally.
The Abominable Snowmen.
Ladies and gentlemen, this brings about a little bit of nostalgia in my heart. Go back, if you haven't already, go back and listen to the first, I'm going to say, 15 episodes of Who Back When, in which we would constantly talk about the Yeti of the story. Finally, Who Back When is getting to Yetis. And for Audio Who, we are reviewing The Scapegoat. Catch you in the next one. Be rad and excellent to each other. Ciao.
Bye.
Blammo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's at Who Back When. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?